Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing. From writers and critics who prophesied with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are a-changing. Come senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times they are a-changing. Come mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't let your hand, for the times they are a-changing. The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times they are a-changing. The kids are on the move. They're marching. They won't take no for an answer. You know, it reminds me of the good old days when my generation marched on Washington to stop war and create civil rights for everyone. We were so proud when we won. We got them to stop the draft. Everybody got an equal chance. Power to the people! Except we didn't really win much. They gave us a few concessions. We were so happy we forgot all about making change. We forgot make love, not war. We just made babies instead. Some of us got into power. And you know what? They really got into power. They loved it so much, they'd do anything to keep it. Well, it'll be interesting to see if this current generation will actually make a difference. I wrote this intro for Open Mic Tuesday at ArtServe night before last, and decided to repeat it for tonight's show. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, and our own website, newdream.us. It's listener-supported radio, and they deserve your support. So head on over to revolution.radio and show them some love. I'm proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Chuck, tonight we welcome these special guests, John Kanicki, Frank Cordero, and Phil Ferruggio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Montclair, New Jersey, in Fort Lauderdale, in Duluth, in Des Moines, Iowa, in Port Orange, and wherever you are. The final book in the Geronimo's Revenge series is now available. The revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. The revolution will be born at 2 a.m. in a group home in Minneapolis by young people who are not stupid, who know what's going on, who are brave and loving and fearful and with bills to be paid and routines that need to be maintained and all that you are. But these people, they choose to do something. Join them. From CWG Press, Crusher versus the Empire, Crusher in Wonderland, and now the final book in the series, Geronimo's Revenge.
Our first guest of the evening is Phil Ferruggio. Phil joins us from Port Orange, Florida, with his column, It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, good evening, working stiffs. You know, look, nice kids, now you should march for war and empire control. If anyone channel surfed on Sunday well into the evening, all the channels covered the massive demonstrations by our youth for gun control. From my activist eyes, this was impressive, with tens of thousands of good and decent young folks in many cities throughout America taking to the streets. Oh, how I wish their parents and grandparents were out there with us after this empire illegally and immorally invaded and occupied Iraq. For years, we anti-empire and anti-war advocates stood on the street corners of many cities and towns, almost in a vacuum. At least this new generation is getting back to the basics of our First Amendment right of free speech. One recalls how the Bush-Cheney cabal made many of us actually stand in, quote, caged-in areas which were relabeled free speech zones, always far away from the target of our protest. I have never even fired a gun in my baby boomer years of existence. Although I do agree with most of the demands of these gun control advocates, a part of me doesn't want eligible fellow citizens to be totally forbidden from owning any such weapon. Background checks, both for criminal and mental problems, are a necessity, as is not allowing many of the crazy sort of overkill weapons to be sold. So, all in all, seeing those caring young folks out there did bring some level of joy to me. However, we need them out there for a far greater demand, and that is the pullback of this military empire before it bankrupts us all economically, morally, and spiritually. We have military personnel, many of them but a year or two older than many of those kids who are marching, who are occupying areas of the world that we have no business being in. Some of them have been or will be killed over there, while many more innocent civilians of those countries have been or will be killed by them. Enough already. Do yesterday's young marchers realize, along with their teachers, parents, and relatives, that over half of their federal tax money goes down the rabbit hole of military spending? Do they realize that the cost of keeping one soldier in that Arab desert for 1 year is over $1 million, would pay for 20 teachers or school psychologists for 1 year at $50,000 each? Imagine if young Mr. Cruz had gotten the care he needed years ago when he was screaming out to the system for mental help. Proper gun control may have hindered his search for a weapon and may have not. Food for thought. Do yesterday's caring and dedicated young folks understand that we have over 800 plus military bases in close to 100 different countries and enough nukes to destroy the world 1,000 times over? Have these young kids gotten the proper teaching about 9/11 alternative theories to question the story that our government's commission gave out? Ditto for our preemptive illegal invasion of Iraq. The mainstream and even many alternative media feel safe to overcover events like the one on Sunday. Why? Well, it is of no concern to this empire, so long as the focus of the protest is not directed at taking away the many lethal weaponry that our empire possesses and uses. Gun control will do nothing regarding the hundreds of billions of dollars, maybe even trillion, that is being spent by the Pentagon, and of course delegated to them by a compliant, bought and paid for, two-party political con job. Meanwhile, many of Sunday's kids will have problems paying for their higher education in a year or two or three. Many of those same kids will, as adults, realize that they cannot get the proper health care coverage or other parts of the once cherished safety net because their localities just don't have the financial funding that Uncle Sam used to send them along. There's no money. So this writer, for one, would love to be able to reach out to those young demonstrators and offer them the facts they will need to grasp what is happening. Perhaps others of my mindset will do the same. Just imagine if we had those numbers out there to show the empire's handlers and the embedded media how our young patriots feel about what is needed to save our great nation from the greedy war mongers. Happy Easter.
The newest issue of Penn Magazine is now online. The Cult of the United States Military. Also, the Plowshares Movement, fighting against militarism of the United States for peace for people. Find it at PennMagazine.us, P-E-N-N, Magazine.us. Also here in flip page format, archive.org. And now it's time for Revolution College, underground night school in the basement of the abandoned humanities building, Thursdays. The course description, what the hell is going on around here? Vince Lombardi.
Real change can come through knowledge of what the FBI and CIA are doing to this country through propaganda. They've done it for decades all over the world. Why not here? Especially here. The American system needs to be overhauled. We know that. What we need is a nonviolent revolution. The biggest battle is being fought with information. The American people are an incredible untapped force for good, but they don't really know much of anything about what's really going on. So what needs to happen is the base work for revolution. Awareness. We just don't know enough that we need a revolution, that it can come about through knowledge, even though that might sound boring at first. And we're doing this for that very purpose, because the world is reaching a point where we really need to do something. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. This is where we are headed.
Tonight's Revolution College lesson, Debbie Lusignan, L-U-S-I-G-N-A-N, the same progressive. Find her on YouTube and BitChute, B-I-T-C-H-U-T-E. When I started doing these videos about 3 years ago during the Bernie Sanders campaign, I very much considered myself progressive and left. But through these past 3 years, I really have morphed that party label are pretty meaningless in a system so usurped by corruption. So now my videos are more not about party politics, but about trying to expose the corruption, how the corruption works, how it has seized different aspects of our government, how we can move forward to understand what is actually happening. So we can finally address what are the real obstacles for the American people to have any power anymore. It is a very dangerous time in our country's history right now. People are starting to be very afraid. People are talking in whispers. We are very much living in a climate of intimidation and fear. And this is very much a silencing tactic so that we are starting to self-censor. Very Orwellian times. The American people have been playing a game of pretend with ourselves. We are propping up a collective delusion where we are not addressing the elephant in the room because it scares people, and people don't know what to do about it. Since 2001, when the towers came down, this country, instead of keeping our wits, we were subjected to a very deliberate propaganda campaign, a fear-mongering campaign, a disinformation campaign. We got swept up in this mantra of patriotism and this threat. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So thus, you become the enemy. You have to disallow the law of physics to believe the official story of 9/11. We still, to this day, 17 years later, talk about 9/11 under our breath. We've gone along with all these massive rights grabs against us. Anybody who has investigated it knows the official story is a lie. We're to believe there have been 33 mass shooting events in the past couple of years. Right now, post-Parkland shooting, we are literally watching the same thing that happened after 9/11 happened again. A story that if you critically evaluate, it is so clear that the story is so contradictory and there are so many red flags that if we were a sane country, we would not be talking about more rights being relinquished. We would be demanding to understand what happened before moving forward in the same absurd pattern. There is nothing disrespectful to anyone or crazy about objectively analyzing information and having a logical discussion about it. And if there are red flags that demand that we need more answers, you follow them. It has nothing to do with right or left. It has to do with keeping our heads so we can see what's before our very eyes. If you really want to know what happened, you go watch the footage of what they showed you happened. Because if you go to the local WPLG Local 10 news clip, they have 4 hours. It does not show a single person who had a gunshot wound being carried out. It does show empty gurneys being loaded in and as rescued. It does show individuals with absolutely no sign of injury or any medical equipment whatsoever. It shows that. It shows what 12 witnesses on national media told us. It documents a drill. The drill that the students and parents and teachers said was scheduled that day. One girl said, they told us to go outside so they could start shooting up. And there were army guys there, and they were piling bodies into the corner. Simulated. We have to say, the emperor has no clothes. The emperor has no clothes. You've got to say it, and you've got to say it out loud. They never actually address or refute the content of the claims. They say, oh, these crazy, awful people are saying crazy, awful things. We're not. But before you even listen to what we are pointing out, first words out of their mouth is, you're crazy, because they listen to this media. What you're seeing right now is nothing more than a cheap power trick. They're doing it right before our eyes. They're not hiding it. They're counting. They are counting on the fact that people could not believe something like this could happen. And so that's it. It disappears before your eyes. People are sick of this. People are seeing this. This is the only shot we have right now. The only means that my videos have any value is if tens and hundreds of thousands of people speak out.
We'll see you next Thursday night for the next session of Revolution College, underground in the abandoned humanities building. And now, for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees. Can't see a thing. He's on Twitter, on his phone, chatting with the Kremlin. Every once in a while, he has to go stop somebody, but then it's back to the trees and Twitter. He says he believes he needs to stay in constant contact. 10 a.m. every day, Buddy goes to the Waffle House, has his large scattered hash browns covered in melted cheese with sausage and 2 eggs, 930 calories, with 2 coffees. He waits, looking out the window by himself. And when the time is right, he goes and plugs the men's toilet. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, the view from my Borashki cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box. An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Upon a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw, plowing through the ragged skies and up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky, for he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-i-oh! Yippee-i-oh! Ghost riders in the sky. Their faces gaunt, their eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught 'em yet. 'Cause they got to ride forever on that range up in the sky, on horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cries. As the riders loped on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, I'll ride in on our range. Then cowboy, change your ways today, or with us you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Yippee-i-oh! Yippee-i-yay! Ghost riders in the sky. Ghost riders in the sky. Ghost riders in the sky.
Okay. Working stiffs. You know, whoop, nice whoop, kids. Whoop. Now sorry, you should whoops. March for war and empire control.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Well, tonight I'm here on the radio, even though I'm really supposed to be somewhere else. You know, I sing in the choir over at St. Mark's Episcopal Church, and well, we were supposed to be there for a Maundy Thursday service, but I didn't want to leave old Mike by himself tonight, so I decided that I would stay home. I mean, I figure a Good Friday service and two services on Easter Sunday, plus the extra concert thing we get on Palm Sunday afternoon and the Palm Sunday service, you know, that's really enough for Holy Week. I think I can get away with skipping one tonight. So that's why I'm here.
Chuck, what do you have? What are your services tomorrow? Or is it one long one, right?
Yeah. Tomorrow we're doing, there's typically two services that are done on Good Friday. One is called Stations of the Cross, and it's about 3 hours long. And the other one is called The Seven Last Words, and it's about 2 hours long. And fortunately for us, bring the 2 hour one.
Well, good for you, Chuck. I remember that years gone by. Thank you.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, cue the Rimsky-Korsakov. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford P. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Professor Rutherford P. Roswell having his breakfast at a local establishment. "I assume you want your regular pancakes," said the servant, as he referred to him. "And what would it matter," says Professor Rutherford P. Roswell, setting down the menus. "Would it mean the truth about the John Kennedy murder would come out in the general public after, what, over 5 decades? The server stood still because she knew the routine. Professor Rutherford P. Roswell ended up having the eggs.
Our next guest of the show is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines. At the Des Moines Catholic Worker, Frank is a former Catholic priest, and as we have mentioned many times, he spent many years in county jails and federal prison as a commitment to fighting against the U.S. military machine and for the poor, and he lives and works with the poor in Des Moines. And Chuck talked to Frank earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right about now.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hi, Frank. How are you?
Well, I'm doing as good as a guy can, given where I'm at. Today, I was responsible for both. I'm responsible for both the 3 o'clock snack and the 6 o'clock supper. And I knocked it out of the park with the 3 o'clock snack. And the supper is on course. There's enough volunteers to make it happen. I did a good day's work. So, and the sun was warm, hints of spring.
Okay.
So there are reasons to say amen. Got to walk in, and I'm continuing to push the, that proverbial rock up the hill, working for justice in a country that don't give a damn. However, the price is not death, and I live well, and I do the works of mercy. These things are probably the best we can do sometimes.
Indeed.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I am. I'm supposed to be singing with my choir tonight at a Maundy Thursday service, but I'm staying home to do the radio show instead. I figure.
Good for you.
I figure a 2-hour service tomorrow and 2 services on Sunday morning ought to be enough for this week.
I sure hope people cut you some slack.
Yeah, I think they will.
Good for them. You know, I also am painfully reminded of the Holy Week we're in, and the you know, the sense of the liturgical year and Christians. And I did a recent letter to the editor that got published in the Des Moines Register. I'm wondering, did I read this to you guys last week? Do you remember my my letter to the editor on fascism? Let's just revisit it again, and I'll I've got it right here on Clue. Give me a moment, and I will tell you it's been long in coming, I needed to I finally got it written, and it fell right in place. So this is what's published in the Des Moines Register. It said faith leaders should oppose drone war, by Frank Cordero, March 25th. Wake up, Iowa. We are living in a functioning Christian fascist culture. On July 21, 2017, the Register reported that Iowans had more faith in the U.S. military than they do in our white Christian churches, who ranked second in the poll, just ahead of the police. These are the markings of a fascist culture. How did this happen? January 11, Register also reported that since September 11, 2001, terrorist attacks, Iowa has had more than 19,000 Guard members mobilized for service worldwide. And this includes 98 Iowans who have died fighting in these U.S.-led wars in the Middle East. In those same years in Iowa, our peace movement could not find 100 fellow Iowans to commit civil disobedience and spend a night in jail. Since 9/11, Iowans have paid dearly with blood and wealth for these immoral, unjust, illegal Pope John Paul VI, quote, wars in little or nothing for peace. And because our hearts are where our blood and treasures are, we now believe we can be good Christians and be pro-rich, pro-war, and pro-USA. Now, this is what the Register did not publish. This is bad faith. I blame our Iowa Christian leaders, pastors, and priests. Where were they? Today, on the south side of Des Moines, Iowans are killing people in the Middle East 24/7 from computers set up at the Iowa Guard Drone Command Center. And Iowa Christian leaders, pastors, and priests are silent. Where are you? That's how I ended it. It's we need to just start calling it what it is. In Iowa, this culture is not good, and it's cultivated.
Yeah.
And it was here way before Ronald Reagan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, not Ronald Reagan. I'm sorry. I'm caught in the 80s. Donald Trump. Oh, my God. Donald Trump. Okay. Oh, God, help us.
Or Reagan, too.
Yeah. Yeah, Reagan was a much better actor. This guy's just ugly billionaire real estate guy from New York. Ugly. Just ugly. Oh. He'd be ugly in any political party. I can't. Why Republicans didn't say, like, really, this guy is not good. Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Me either.
So that's what's going on. No updates with Jess or Ruby. Always near and close to my heart. We're gearing up for the trial for Eddie and Greg and Brian, Catholic workers, and Bloomers, our own, dealing with the drone command here. And I'm trying to gather the kind of emotional energy and strength and look for interlocking commitments from our community to engage in another year's campaign at the drone command and step up our game and get back out there doing a regular vigil and just go back to, cross the line, get arrested, do jail time. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about. So, yeah. So, all you out there, I give this old man some prayer and his community. Wonderful people I live with. We are such lame, crippled, broken. We really do specialize in possessed. And these are the stormtroopers of the kingdom. It says so in the Gospels.
Yeah.
And I certainly believe it in our community. And Chuck, you visited, so you know what I'm talking about.
Sure do. I sure do.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I got to run. Oh, love you.
Bye-bye. Have a good Easter. And
thank you, brother.
We'll talk to you next week. All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye.
The final book in the Geronimo's Revenge series is now available. The revolution will not be planned in the checkout line at Walmart or in the line to punch out on Friday afternoon or at happy hour. The revolution will be born at 2 a.m. in a group home in Minneapolis by young people who are not stupid, who know what's going on, who are brave and loving and fearful and with bills to be paid and routines that need to be maintained and all that you are. And these people, they choose to do something. Join them. Crusher versus the Empire. Crusher in Wonderland. Geronimo's Revenge. From CWG Press.
Our next and final guest for the evening is John Kanicki. John will be joining us in three separate segments tonight. He's a first-time guest on our show, so let me tell you a little bit about him. John Kanicki is a poet activist. He's a full-time caregiver to his wife, Sylvia. He volunteers as a missionary at the Church of Christ at Chancellor Avenue in the inner city of Newark, New Jersey. He has four poetry books: Murmurings of a Madman, Poet to the Poor, Poems of Hope for the Bottom 1%, A Day's Weather, and Sunset Sonnets. In addition, he's written a science fiction book called Words of the Future, and two horror novellas, Scarecrow, Scarecrow, and Satan's Siren. His memoirs, More Than the Madness, depict his struggle with bipolar disorder and help to fight the stigma of mental illness. Kanicki has an extensive online presence. A good place to start is johnkanicki.blogspot.com. And I think I should spell that for you. It's johnkanicki.blogspot.com. Okay, here we go with the first of three segments.
Okay, hello everybody. My name is John Konecki. I live in Montclair, New Jersey, which is part of New York City almost. We have a train from our house, and I can walk to the train in 3 minutes, and it's a 20-minute ride to New York City. I am a full-time caregiver for my wife, Sylvia, who suffers from dementia, and I like to write, and I hope one day that my writing will provide our financial means, as it's very difficult to have a wife that you needs 24-hour care and you can't work. And I am a poet. I am a writer. I am an activist. I suffer from mental illness, bipolar. I've been 30 years in recovery. And so as such, I am an activist for the mentally ill, that people such as me can return to the normal life, so-called, and function in society. My poetry, as you'll soon find out, it takes a lot of political working with the poetry. I try to make a statement in my poetry, but in my prose, that's not so much the case, as I just like to tell some stories. And Chuck has been so kind and so gracious as to allow me to come on his show and visit you. So I will read to you a poem called Tea with Joe Hill. That is going to be the best poem I ever wrote in my life. And I know I'm never going to write a better poem. I hope everybody knows who Joe Hill is. I didn't know who Joe Hill was until I was about 30 to 35, when I was working with an engineer named Rick. And Rick was playing some old CDs, and I found out about Joe Hill. And, you know, the story of Joe Hill intrigued me, so I investigated him. And I think that's one thing that as activists that we need to learn from our past, because this whole idea of revolution and resistance and revolt, it has been tried before, and people were successful and people were failed, and there are a lot of lessons to learn. And Joe Hill was executed by the state of Utah. He was assassinated by the United States government, and he has a story to tell. So here is my poem, Tea with Joe Hill, which won the Joe Hill Poetry Prize. And I went out to Banning Park, Los Angeles, with my wife, Sylvia, and we read this poem on Labor Day. So here's Tea with Joe Hill. Joe Hill and I had tea. He let his biscuits soak. They say America is free. Man, how they love to joke. Ask Sacco and Vanzetti. Ask Red Cloud and Crazy Horse. And the way I see is things are getting worse. I said, Joe, why ain't you dead? Righteousness is like love, my friend, laughed Joe as he shook his head. Spirits never die and never end. 1,000 tyrants and all their force, in truth could never compete with the love that is the source of one of my melodies sweet. You see, death and life, they coexist. Some never die and some never live. So songs of revolution will always persist, for unto themselves my songs give. So open your eyes and organize. Never give in to their lies and organize. Do not hate and despise, but organize. Raise your voice in mighty cries and organize. Joe slurped the last of his tea and bid me a final farewell. Above all, fight to be free. You'll get heaven when you give them hell. That was Tea with Joe Hill. We live in a time where our heroes are vilified. If you go back in time to, and when I just had a discussion with a friend of mine, you go back into the time where Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were on the scene. In their day, they were vilified, they were radical, they were the enemy. And now 50, 60 years later, they're accepted by the mainstream, and all is well. Of course, the mainstream co-ops what they are, but it's a good thing that at least in some semblance that they are recognized for what they did. But remember, at the moment, just like Black Lives Matter, they're being vilified. But in 50, 60 years, when people look back at time, I'm sure things are going to be different. And one such person that I think is being unfairly vilified is Colin Kaepernick, who is a very talented athlete and a good quarterback. And unfortunately, because of his political stance, he has his trade has been cut off, and he can't make a living by the way he wants to. And that happens to so many people who speak out against this insidious thing called the system that we are afflicted by. That if you deviate from what they consider normal, if you challenge the powers to be, then you will be blacklisted. And it's a subtle thing, but it is done. So for Colin Kaepernick, he touched me, and I wrote a poem called Time to Stand Up. And this is Time to Stand Up. When Pilgrim Pride committed genocide, did you stand? When from across the sea, merchants dealt chattel slavery, did you stand? When immigrants of all ages were paid starvation wages, did you stand? When Jim Crow did reign, inflicting bitter pain, did you stand? When they desecrated Mother Earth, violating indigenous worth, did you stand? When imperialism dominated and atrocities were created, did you stand? When the police time and time again gunned down black young men, did you stand? When the CIA in sin flooded the hood with heroin, did you stand? When millions were spent on war and nothing to the poor, did you stand? Did you stand for every injustice and wrong? Then why should I stand for your racist song? In my poetry, I like to look back at historical figures because if we can look at history and you know, history, when we look at history as revolutionaries, as people who have a different vision, we need to do some digging. Columbus did not discover America in 1492. There was perhaps between 100 million and 200 million indigenous peoples on the North American continent. Columbus came to a utopia, and he enslaved the natives and forced them to dig gold. And Columbus found it cheaper to enslave the natives and allow them to die from starvation and enslave more than to feed him. And this man is celebrated by the United States. But akin to Columbus is a man named Cortez. And here is a poem I wrote about Cortez, and it's called Cortez's Gold. Cortez came looking for gold, burned his ships by the water. Lie after lie he told, and then guns erupted in bloody slaughter. Many died in the genocide, and Cortez, his fame grew wide. Ships loaded the gold purchased with pain, and sailed a world away to Spain, where the Spaniards with special care lined the walls of their houses of prayer. Bow down to God, country, and crown, and look upon the yellow wall. It tells you all. Here's one. The Black Panthers is a, in that same discussion I've had with the PAN, the Black Panthers, they haven't come into full acceptance, and they're not glorified yet. I think one reason why is because the their connection to Chairman Mao. But the Black Panthers, they were an excellent group. They had breakfast programs for children that wouldn't get breakfast. It's funny, in Chicago, they started to do the breakfast program for the impoverished children, and then the government saw that it was an effective thing, and they started doing it for the children. And as soon as the Black Panthers were eradicated, they stopped doing the breakfast program. The Black Panthers, they involved people in the political process. They stood up for the people being abused and inflicted by the police in the inner city. And the Black Panthers were a very positive group. They were not a violent group. They were, but they did believe in self-defense. And the Black Panthers, of course, were infiltrated by program called Cointel Pro, where the FBI would pay people to go into the Black Panther Party and just cause discourse and disharmony. And of course, that stands 100% to every against every ideal that the United States should stand for. But not on the Black Panthers. I have a poem here called A Panther's Dream. Dream, dream, dream. Dream as much as you can. One day you will grow to be a woman or man. Don't let the darkness destroy the love of life and your sweet joy. There are those of us who wish you glory. That is a Black Panther story. Nothing good comes without a fight. Just like doing wrong is never right. When we were young, we fought like hell. So when you were young, life would be well. You too have your cross to bear and work to do. Know your thoughts and prayers are with you. It is not children who dream alone. We dream also, those who have grown. Yet there is something about dreams really strange. The people are different, but the dreams don't change. To live a good life and to be all you can seems like happiness isn't everybody's plan. Child, when life hits you hard and you just gotta scream, dream, dream, dream. Dream as much as you can, because fighting for your dreams makes you a woman or a man. Dream, 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 dream.
Well, that's that completes our first segment from John Kanicki. We have some more poetry and then a bit of a conversation coming up in the next half hour. So I think I was fortunate to find John. Now let me close this segment with one of the things I would have been singing if I were at choir. Abide with me, fast falls the eventide, the darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, O abide with me. I need thy presence every passing hour. What but thy grace can foil the tempter's power? Cloud and sunshine, Lord, abide with me.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Anti-aircraft gun pointed to action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific War Time this morning.
We are far stronger than we were 10 weeks ago.
Hotel quarters, all hands at your battle station.
Be nervous, count your toes. I'll do the mastermind around here.
You who have not seen it do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Check it out every Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time. Join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show, Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we continue with John Konecki. This will be part two of three. And you remember we were talking about the Black Panthers last time. Well, here we go.
Inspired by the Black Panther Party was a man named Mumia Abu-Jamal. And I don't think I'm pronouncing that right. The accent is in a certain movement. Mumia Abu-Jamal was a young man, was involved with the Black Panther Party. And at that point in his life, he was marked for destruction by the state. He reported on MOVE, and of course, MOVE was destroyed by the state in a very tragic event. Two bombs by the state police of Pennsylvania were dropped on the MOVE house. And when the people trapped in the basement tried to escape, they were shot at by the police. But Mumia Abu-Jamal was on death row for a crime he most likely did not commit. In fact, if you want to say he was guilty, I will say with 100% certainty that he did not get a fair trial. The judge in the case, Judge Sabo, just by statistics, he sent more people to death row than any other person or by percentage. So right then and there, you had somebody out to get Mumia. There are a lot of things that went wrong with the trial. Some witnesses weren't allowed to testify. The prostitute, I can't remember her name, who testified for the state, she was allowed to practice her trade without any molestation as a reward for saying what the state wanted. The police want to be safe on their job. And, you know, I'm a pacifist. I don't believe in violence. But, if the police want to be safe, we need a fair trial system where innocent people stay out of jail and guilty people go to jail. And Mumia, at the very least, did not get a fair trial. And he was on death row, but thanks to protests of people, his death row sentence was commuted. And this poem was written for Mumia before the death row sentence was commuted. It's simply called Mumia. Mumia lives in a place that should not exist, a result of a mockery they call a trial. The world proclaims injustice, many insist. Still, the system is in defiant denial. I do not glory in the death of any man, yet how much can we take? We rise against oppression to do the best we can. Day after day, you inflict us with your lies. The call for justice we will never forsake. Almighty God, he hears our cries. Almighty God, him you cannot fool, or shut him out with your actions cruel. So Mumia lives. 3 stone walls and an iron gate. These are the manifestations of America's hate. When you want us to kill for the flag, we are brothers all. Come serve your country. That is the call. And in return, you make us sit and wait. Herded in your ghettos, you try to educate. And when we act on the lessons you teach, when we speak our mind and practice free speech, you send in the police, the FBI, and CIA, and heroes like Mumia are taken away. An honest day in court is what we require. That would retort and quench this fire. Instead, Mumia sits condemned on death row in a tormented existence that few do know. A political prisoner, an unwilling symbol. You can bind the man, but not the soul. Mumia, these words I write and promise never to give up the fight. And the last one for this section, Chuck, I don't know how the time's going. I live in, like I said, in Montclair, New Jersey, and Staten Island is not too far away. And there was a man named Eric Garner. And he was executed by the state of New York by a police officer. And even though, and you can watch the videotape of the execution of Eric Garner as a brother taped it. And his brother was later molested by the police for his efforts. But Eric Garner was being arrested for allegedly selling cigarettes. Of course, he never got his kangaroo court. And if you watch the tape, what happened is that Eric Garner was arrested and then he was being choked. And at some point there was about half a dozen to a dozen police officers around him. And a police officer was on top of Eric Garner and he was choking the man. Now, Eric Garner was of considerable size. I understand that. But he was starting to say, I can't breathe. And the man who was choking him, the officer who was choking him, continued to choke him. And this is when you have 9 to 12 armed police officers around the man. So Eric Garner was choked to death because he was selling loose cigarettes. Of course, that's not the real reason. The real reason was that he objected to the police harassment, and he spoke up for himself. And in America, certain people cannot tolerate that. So this I wrote about Eric Garner. It's a sad thing. It is a thing that shouldn't happen in America. It's called Executed Without Trial, Alleged Crime Selling Cigarettes. Eric Garner, I watched you die. No loving farewells, no last goodbye. Simply hanging out on the street, getting hassled by the heat. I'm tired of you messing with me, a sentiment many say honestly, cause in America, it's a sin to have darker skin. Eric Garner, you were assassinated, and how much you were hated, cause those there to serve and protect showed contempt and no respect. Eric Garner, I watched you die, but hear this anguished cry. Let it be known, you did not die alone. For in that choking hate, so died my hope for the state. Eric Garner, we shall not forget, another Emmett Till to regret. Eric Garner, I watched you die, but now is not the time to cry. They killed you in a hurry, denied you a fixed jury. Now is the time to fight. Now is the time to make it right. We have a solution. Its name is revolution. Eric Garner, I watched you die. The question is why. I know the answer, and so do you, sir. Racism is an institutionalized thing, my friend, and it's high time to bring it to an end. Agree with me when I say it's got to end today.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Orson B. Riddle, crisis actor of Paducah. Orson sits on his cement front steps, smoking, to watch traffic, but there is no traffic. Inside on the walls, above the TV and Xbox, in a brown frame, is his membership certificate to the Crisis Actors Guild, and on the kitchen table, he still has to mail it yet, is his membership application to the Propaganda Movie Actors Association. His suitcase lays wide open on the bed because he just got home from Florida and yet can't really see the stickers he's collected from Oklahoma, Texas, California, New York, Boston, Connecticut, and Nevada. Orson B. Riddle usually only gets 1, 2, maybe 3 days at home till it's time to pack his makeup kit, head bandages, prosthetic, and go to the next big event. For 3 years, he worked at Walmart. Then he saw this ad on Craigslist. He's never looked back. Join us next week for yet another episode of Orson B. Riddle, Crisis Actor of Brownsville, sponsored by Quick Dry Oats, hardened to a cement block in your stomach within minutes, because you never know when you're going to get a good hard kick in the gut. We're there for you. When I talked with John Kanicki the other day, we attempted to sing We Shall Overcome. Well, it turns out it's not easy to sing when there's a lag of a second or so between one end and the other of the conversation. So we're going to pick up the conversation without the singing. Here we go.
I had a friend, he actually played with Pete Seeger for one time.
Really? Really?
And it's a really funny story because my friend Justin Jordan, I would stock the books with him at the bookshelf. We'd hand them out to the children. Uh-huh. Not the children, but the young adults going to county college. We would do a lot of talking. And he said that he was offered to play mandolin with Pete Seeger. And he said, well, I don't play mandolin. And then they said the magic words, we'll pay you $400. So he got up there and was playing. He got up there and he was playing mandolin.
Okay.
I don't remember the words, but he goes to Pete Seeger and says, Mr. Seeger, this is the greatest honor of my life. And he says, never mind that. But Pete wasn't like that. And then they were singing, and Pete Seeger turns to Justin and says, sing, damn it, sing. He wants everyone to sing.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, I got. I, yeah,
Go ahead.
No, that's all right. Okay. I had a Malcolm X story, but it's not that positive. you want to hear the Malcolm X? I used to have a job. I would count cars, so I was always, you know, because of my mental illness, I'm paranoid about things, you know, and you know, I'm conscientious, so I want to do a good job. It's always good to be a good wage slave because then you have more input, you know. But anyway, I got to the job early, and there was this African-American man, and I started talking, and he had the greatest job in the world, I think, because his job was, and he was the owner, he would vacate buildings and get paid for it, and what he would do is the equipment inside the building he would sell. So he actually did no work. They would say, here, we'll give you $1,000 to empty out this building or whatever it was, and he would see what's in the building, and then he would sell what's in the building, and somebody would come and take it out. So we were sitting there talking, and he said he went to a Malcolm X rally in up there in Harlem, and he was at Malcolm X. Malcolm X got up there and started speaking and did his talk, you know, and he says, if anybody doesn't agree with me and wants to say something, you know, against what I spoke, I'll give you the opportunity to stand up and say it now. So the man stood up and he said, Mr. X, you know, Malcolm, you know, what you said is very persuasive, and, you know, you make a lot of good points, you make a lot of sense, but I never do anything without thinking about it very carefully. You know what Malcolm X said? He said, shut up and sit down. That's what Malcolm X said. I don't. But you know, something I'd like to talk about is, you know, there's not a lack of leaders in the movement, Chuck, but there's a lack of attention. You know, I mean, it seems that when somebody get going, and I really don't want to name names because that wouldn't be fair, but it seems somebody get going, they get a little measure of popularity, they get tossed a bone, and they get a television show. If you know what I'm saying, Chuck?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, but there are a lot of good people out there doing a lot of good work, and they don't get recognized, and no attention is brought to them. But you know, in my little community, I know a lot of good people. There's Peace Action. You know, my wife and I, before she can't walk upstairs no more, but we're a volunteer at Peace Action, and they do their little bit. And, you know, Greg Payson, he's with the Socialist Party. I really respect Greg Payson because he's like on the right side of every cause and actually does something. I remember one time we had a for closing down Guantanamo Bay, and it was on the anniversary, I think, if I remember correctly, and you know, I'm coming home to work from work, and I'm going to drop by there for a half hour. And I drive by. We in Montclair, there's a spot called the Corner where we protest. It's at the corner of Bloomfield Avenue, Fullerton, and Church Street. And at that intersection, you're well visible. And we protested the war there, not personally, because I didn't join until the Kerry campaign. That's when I found out about it. But since after 9/11 up until, I think, 2012, we didn't miss a Friday protesting that war. And you know, it's like a juggernaut, Chuck. They just keep on doing their evil, and we're protesting, and it grinds us down.
Yeah,
you know, but it's not futile.
We're still at war. Sometimes you have to wonder if we have the wrong tactics. I know one of our other guests, Mickey Zezima, who lives in Astoria, so not too far from you. He has become pretty much disenchanted with the traditional activism because he says it just doesn't work. What he's doing now, he started up something called Helping Homeless Women, and he's out on the street pretty much every day helping people directly rather than protesting in a way that he says doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, Chuck, I believe in a multi-prong attack. If you every method you use, you know, of course, you know, and that's what, you know, you get at the core of Jesus Christ, right? The core of Jesus' message in Matthew 25. He says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you gave me clothes. I was in jail and I was in prison and you come and visited me. So, you know, meeting the needs of those in need are, you know, it's a powerful statement and it's a great ministry. And, I mean, that always should be, I'm sorry I interrupted you, but I heard him on the show. Remember I told you I listened to the show?
Yeah.
He had your archive, and he was on the show, and he was talking about his work with the, I think it's homeless woman in Manhattan, I believe it is.
Correct.
And, and I know that, you know, there's a great need. I used to do, I never had anything organized there. Well, you know, we would do evangelism, but, there's such a great need there. You know, there's so much need. You know, in Newark, New Jersey, I worked as I put labels on it because it sounds good, but I was a volunteer missionary for the inner city of Newark. And, you know, my wife, when she was well then, we started a, clothes giveaway. And, we live in Montclair, New Jersey, which is affluent. And my wife worked with people in Glen Ridge, which is extremely affluent. And, you know, so we got a lot of good clothes and we just gave it out to the people down there. You know, it was redistribution of wealth, and nobody got upset by it. Mm. You know, we were taking what people. Go ahead, sir. We were taking what people didn't need, and we were giving it to the people down there, and it worked really well. And we, you know, we started giving out school supply, and we didn't really have much resources, Chuck. But you know what? After we did it, the other churches started doing it, and then the city of Newark did it. Now I'm not sure where the inspiration. But it is. Remember when Jesus fed the 5,000, Chuck, and
yeah.
he just had five loaves? Yeah, five loaves and two small fishes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if all of us just did what we could, right? And whatever that is, whatever it is, even if you're, you know, you see somebody, and I never like giving homeless people money because they use it for drugs and alcohol, but buy somebody something for eat. You know, that's not going to kill you. You know, spend some time. Better yet, go to the McDonald's or the Burger King with them. Sit down with them and talk to them. That's what we need. We need acts of kindness. We need love. You know, we need to petition. So let me ask you, Chuck, what do you think about this youth movement that's going on that they were televising?
Well, I think... there are a lot of people out there and they're trying to make a difference. It reminds me of the days when I used to march for civil rights and against the Vietnam War back in the late 60s, early 70s. And, you know, we felt like we had a lot to do with some of the big changes that occurred then. But then it turned out over the years, maybe those changes weren't quite as big as we thought they were. And maybe they just kind of let us think that we won. And then we weren't, you know, protesting anymore. And the whole thing eroded.
Yeah. See, there's two kinds of change, Chuck, the way I see it. And there's there's revolutionary change and there's reform. So, revolutionary change is when, you had the Civil War and, the system changed. So after the Civil War, nobody for the most part could own another person, right? I know in practice it didn't really, have that great impact initially, but the system changed. And what it is then is now what Roosevelt did was he reformed the system. So you understand during Roosevelt's time, there were a lot of people. The communist movement was very big. And there was a lot of talk about sedition and revolution and violent revolution. And what happened is that the people who had power got to be afraid. And they realized that if they didn't, you know, ease up on things, that it would explode. It's just like a pot on a stove, Chuck. You have a pot on the stove, and in the stove, you got water boiling. And you keep on turning the heat up. And eventually, if you don't let some of that steam out, it's going to blow up. So what they did is that the people were angry. They were hungry. So they made reforms, right? All these great things happen. All these reforms happen. But as you can see, over time, you know, once that we lose focus on the movement, the society as a general, then what happens is they take away things little by little, because the people who control things are just greedy by nature. It's their drug, you know, just like a heroin addict covets that heroin. These greedy people covet more and more money. You know, they got more money than they could use for 100 lifetimes, but yet they covet more. Yep. So with any change, Chuck, you know, we want revolutionary change, which does not necessarily mean violence, but instead of reformation. Now, when somebody goes up there and says, oh, we want a minimum $15 wage, well, you know, I'm all for that. I think that's a great thing, Chuck. You know, $15 an hour. Hey, if you can get it, more power to you. But you know what? Over time and inflation, that's going to be wiped out too.
Exactly.
And the people in power, they laugh at people who say, oh, we want a $15. But then you come and say, I want an egalitarian system. You stole the land in the first place from the Native Americans. You shouldn't own it. We don't need management. The workers can run the factories and the shops and so much what you do, the Wall Street, the insurance companies, the banks, you're all just a bunch of parasites. And I'll tell you what, we're going to take the whole thing and give it into the hands of the people, right?
Yeah.
Now you advocate that, and the people who hold things, they listen to you and they say, you know what? You know, if that happens, we're going to lose everything. So what they do, what they turn around and do, is they give the man asking the $15 an hour, they give it to him. You see?
Exactly.
And so, yeah.
Okay, well.
We're
going to have to cut this short, but
that's fine.
That was very interesting, and let's hope that we can talk again sometime, and maybe
sure.
We'll continue this and talk about evolutionary rather than revolutionary change.
Okay.
Okay. Something to think about. Thanks again.
Okay.
John Konecki.
Well, I hope I did. Yeah, John Konecki. I hope I passed your audition, as John Lennon said. I didn't know what you want. And
exactly.
I wish you could have sang together, Chuck. I mean, that would have been good.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll do that one of these times. Okay. Thanks again.
And I hope it works out well. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Tonight at the Moonrock Lake Public Library, they will be reading from the best-selling book by Moonrock Lake self-published author and dog catcher, Solomon Sendak, entitled Sweat, Global Warming in a Small Town and Other Tales of the Great American Eastern Middle West. An excerpt is kindly sent to us by Moonrock Lake Public Librarian Doris Schmorris. It's cold today. That's good, right? It's always good when it's cold, because that means there's no global warming yet, right? Anyway, there was a town, Jennifer Junction, not too far from Moonrock Lake, that had a warming scare not too long ago. The story's all about the folks in Jennifer Junction. Tommy and Robert S. Thompson and the waitress and Carl with his college in his basement and Guttner and Jesse and the old people grain elevator casino and the radio station wanting everyone to wear sweatpants to stick a middle finger in the air to global warming. And then sort of like the Lindbergh baby, well, sort of not, the Sox baby has been stolen, maybe by that Laverna, the woman at the bank drive-up, maybe by the Foos who own Foos Foods. Maybe not. Jesse and Carl are trying to capture the Foos because they think they took sweat socks. Guttner and Ron Waters in the light blue Robin's Egg blue pickup are chasing Steve, the incredible pizza dude, all around town because they think he took sweat socks. Things tend to get complicated quickly in a small town when you're not that used to complicated things. Anyway, let's get back to our story, huh? It's kind of steamy. Not like daytime TV, like sweaty. Like hot and sweaty. Like moisture under your arms and other places. Sweat. Overall, ubiquitous, omnipresent, universal, global warming in a small town. This gum's good. Makes my jaws strong. Larry likes it. I have strong jaws. I try to chew each stick 100 times on one side, then 100 on the other, and back and forth, you know? Actually, I don't like gum, especially watermelon, and I do not know anyone named Larry. Anything that tastes of watermelon, especially watermelon. I think it helps me get inside my character, my known-of-the-waitress persona. not that hard. I love listening to Coffee Chatter. I think it's the most subtle, intelligent discourse invented by man since Hammurabi's code, the Socratic method, since third base coach signals. I just enjoy being around it, in its midst, within the penumbra, the glow of the embers of the cozy fire of discovery of each table and booth that are, to me, like a dark, welcoming roadhouse at the end of a long, winding, dusty road. I want to be an actress. My mother and father say it's not dignified work. Why don't I just stick to being a waitress if I'm not going to go to school? They would really rather I use my scholarships to NYU, Stanford, Cambridge. If you've ever seen Gilligan's Island on TV, The Howls, that's my folks. I'll go to Stanford when you pry the self-duplicate order pad from my cold, dead hands. Mr. and Mrs. Socks were in the other morning, sitting in Bluebird booth. I've got names. I read where the cottages of this one resort in Minnesota had names. Yeah. Well, they were eating with Laverna. She had the pancakes. They ordered sausage, eggs, toast, the hairdresser's hearty breakfast. Coffee, juice, full-body creamer. Jim Socks was talking. Well, what is he not? He was telling Laverna and Bobby what he thought of the new radio promotion with the sweatpants. Well, Jim and Bobby were wearing sweatpants already, along with hooded sweatshirt, tennis shoes, you know, stopwatch, whistle, ball cap. It's what they wear every day anyway. For church, it's leave the ball caps in the bus. For funerals, black. Weddings, white. They like sports. I could tell Bobby and Laverna weren't listening. Jim's talking and it's like wallpaper. After a while, you don't hear him anymore. He's screaming with a red face, spitting bits of eggs. You look around wondering who's here, and it sure is quiet for a Saturday morning. Jim thinks Ron talks too much. Laverna says, if he didn't, that would be weird radio. Bobby wants to get her volleyball players on a strict steroid diet. She's sure that's what's going on over at Justin Junction. I don't care what it does to the girls in later life, she says. I just don't. I want to beat the crap of Trudy Wells, no matter what I have to do, who gets hurt, what it costs. She took a long drink of juice. Excuse me for caring. That's why they keep score. At the same time that Bobby was talking to Laverna, Jim was telling Laverna that he had Rick and Ron Waters on his regional quarterfinals basketball squad. How many years ago? They were trying to run things then. Little pukes, I'll be rich someday. I'm not dressing a certain way just because they tell me to. Little puke face, little shits, excellent hair. Laverna was listening to both of them at the same time, or trying to, or not. She's got a lot on her mind herself. Murder, robbery, larceny, she calls it. I'm not sure, maybe there's a legal difference. She would know. Bad checks, that's another of her interests. Laverna used to be on the line at Krieger's, but she quit when this opening at the bank drive-thru came up. She took it to be in the middle of the action, where the money is. That's what everyone thinks about all day, having enough money to do exactly what they want to do. Laverna is no different. She just has a more direct approach. Maybe a little more honest than most. She told me she wants an adventure. The kids are almost out of the house, and so is Bill. She asked me if I would go out window peeking some night. She wanted to kidnap some of the high school football players, take them out to the dirt road. I told her we'd go to prison for that. Her eyes just lit up so nice. What would that be like, I wonder, she said. I don't think she's been many places. She just smiled so wide. God love her. After work today, I've got to go to my other job at the senior center. I deal blackjack. It's a nice break from this place after 8 hours. I have to be busy or I go nuts. When Union Pacific shut down this spur, it sent everything over to Jason Junction, which closed our elevator. It sat empty for a few years, collecting pigeons, rats, and Myers Brothers. Then the city got corralled into this statewide improvement project, handed some money that they had to use or lose their liquor license. They had to raise matching funds, which was a huge problem. But finally, they decided to turn the elevator into a new senior citizen center. They formed a committee, the council, Kiwanis, church ladies, some of the old people. The old people told the rest of them what they wanted to do with the center. We don't want another big, cold room with a few old magazines and card tables, Mimi said. So what they did was open a casino-type thing. 200 feet of vertical thrust, geriatric decadence, they're calling it. On the ground level, you have your cards. Second is for darts. Elderly perversion, what's your limit, is the official advertising jingle, I guess. On the third floor, they have whist. On fourth, dice. Then it's topless. And the top, well, bottomless. That's kind of cute. Hey! Hi, it's me, Tommy. I'm sweating myself to death. Somebody took sweat socks. The socks baby. He's a boy. It's just a baby. Just that's too bad. It makes me sad, kind of. Somebody said it just happened. Excuse me. Sorry. Hi. That's why I'm flying over to Carl's. He would know. He knows everything. No, really. He's got his own college. I'd say it's about a week old, the baby. The college is older than that. I can't remember when it was born. I didn't even know they had a baby, really, until this morning. Somebody said it was kidnapped. They think it was the Boos who took it. They're Korean. They're probably getting even for all their babies we've got. Lots of people have them. We got Xbox. Mom says that's enough for now. The Boos. Mary, Woo, and Larry. They don't speak American. They don't look at you. They're always talking to each other, making secret plans, maybe. Bobby, Mrs. Sox, she's my PE teacher. She was. I'm not sure if she will be next year. She said if it was a girl, they were going to call it Sweet Sox. Isn't that just precious, she said. Well, he said, yeah, kind of. If it was a boy, Jim, Mr. Sox was going to call it Sweat because it would be a boy playing sports and always working hard and being a good example to everyone about running wherever you're going and giving 110% and hustling and always working up a ladder, is how he said it. I'm riding around everywhere telling everyone, seeing if they'll help looking for Little Sweat. I saw Nona. She's working this morning since it's Saturday and it's busy. She just waved at me out the front window. She's smart. She knew what I was going to tell her. She wanted me to keep going, telling lots of people. I saw Judy, the Presbyterian minister. She had on her army uniform. She had to be the army recruiter, too, since it's a small town. All the ministers do, I guess. I waved. She saluted. Ooh, that's pretty cool. Paul, he's the janitor at the middle school and high school. Somebody else does the elementary building. Paul was in his pickup in the parking lot of Foods. He get toilet paper and pine salt. I told him maybe he shouldn't go in there, but he did. Paul knows everything about every sport, every kid who ever played sports here. He lets the swarm play football with a Pepsi cup full of gravel and fold it over out behind the bleachers during football games. He's not supposed to, but better to have the swarm on your side. I know. The swarm. It's about 100 little kids run around town doing whatever they want. They surrounded me once on my bike. Lucky for me, it started pouring out or I was dead. I just saw Laverna. I went flying through the drive-up. I thought she'd want to know. I skidded out, then sat there waiting for her to look up and smile. Usually she at least smiles. The car behind me honked. I turn around quick, not a loud honk, more like a beep. Hi. Hi, hey, I said. I come around to the passenger side, walked up with him. Christopher's mom pulled up to talk to Laverna. Hey, did you hear? Hear what, said Robin, his mom. She's always listening, even when she's looking the other way. Yes, it's unfortunate, said Christopher. Christopher says things like unfortunate and fortuitous, depending on whether it's something good or bad. He's in high school, but he's short, so he talks to me. Anyway, he's a state representative for Jennifer Junction. I think he's the only one who wanted to do it. His mom drives him to the state capitol when the legislature's in session. When he's 16, he'll probably drive himself. That's what my mom said. The Mexicans walk through wearing their nice Saturday shirts and jeans on their way somewhere. And then Don pulled up in the cruiser, circled the parking lot. See ya, I told Christopher. I pedaled up to Don. He stopped and rolled his window down to smoke. Hey, Tommy, heard anything new? He asked me. Well, I told him who I talked to so far, where I was going, nothing else. Don sat there with his window down, air conditioning the bank parking lot, smoking. I sat on my bike next to his car. I tried to sit in balance without touching the ground, but wasn't much else to say. Don has kind of limited interest. He's okay as a cop. Somebody said he likes it. Well, see you, Tommy. Stay out of trouble. He flicked his cigarette. He always says that and flicks his cigarette butt away from me. If he was a jerk, he might flick it at me. But then I wouldn't stop and talk to him if he did that all the time. I could see Sherman. I was kind of waiting for old Don to flick his cigarette so I could go see what old Sherman was doing. He's a mailman for this part of town. They give those jobs to servicemen, my dad told me once. I asked Sherman about that once and he laughed, not at me. Said he was a draft dodger in Canada, never got to go to war. He got the job anyway because the rest of the people at this post office are cool, he said. My mom said they're all a bunch of drug addicts, and it's a wonder anybody gets the right mail in this town. Hey, Sherman! Tommy, my man! Sherman stops and waits for me. He's got a black and gray beard and ponytail. He wears a Packers cap with mailman shirt and shorts. Long black socks, black mailman shoes. I tell him right away about Sweat Socks, the baby. Laverna's got him, Sherman says, ducking his head to look over the top of his glasses at the bank drive-thru. Who else has the motive? Cui bono, says Sherman. I didn't say nothing. I had to sit on my bike and think about it. Sherman kept going. I just sat there for a while. It was getting even hotter, I could tell. But from where I was, I could smell chlorine and popcorn, so I pedaled slow, almost falling over to the pool. Some of the lifeguards were there, putting on lotion and whistles. Some were giving lessons to the banker's kids while the parents in the car stared holes in the heads of the lifeguards to pay some attention to their stupid kid that they don't drown during the swimming lesson. Linda's the head lifeguard. She's been there a long time, since I've been going. And now that they built the indoor part of the pool to go with the outdoor, she's got a big job. I wouldn't want it. She also has to buy beer for all the teenagers and gets other stuff for other people. I've seen Sherman shoving dollar bills through the fence to her. It's a lot to keep track of with the pool and everything else, I bet. People are always looking for her, bothering her. She's too fat to climb up on the lifeguard tower anymore, so she stands by the fence with her whistle in her mouth and watches. I guess she used to be pretty. That's what Don said. I guess he was talking about Linda. I don't know who else it would be. Anyway, she said it was the Foos and Laverna, all right. She said Don was thinking about going over and arresting Laverna right now. That's what she heard on the scanner in the lifeguard room. I need to go to talk to Carl. I can't stand that kid. Looking in the window all the time. I think he does it at the house, too, little perv. I've got customers. I can't worry about whether some bimbolicious bank teller stole some little kid. Not when I've got orders waiting. Call the Red Cross. I got ketchup bottles to fill. Look at this. This is what I have to deal with. Missing kidnapped kids. Like, who's got the luxury here? See? Each friggin' napkin stamped with some business name. Jack and Jill Plumbing. Fern's Family Dental Care. Jennifer High School. Jesus Junction. And guess who gets to stamp each and every one between wiping runny noses and filling salt shakers and cleaning off syrup bottles? KJEN Radio. Rawl and Saul's friendly hometown bank. Jane, June, John, Kent, Mark, and Mary, attorneys at law. I've worked here at Tony and Tina's Cafe for a few years now. Does not get old, not really, when you think about it. I'm a people person. I need a smoke. Come outside for a second. I hear a lot. People think I'm not listening. Well, I'm not, but I can't really help it. I guess old Ron was home one afternoon about four. He and his son and daughter and better half all ended up in the kitchen. This was before school let out for the summer. Yeah, had to be. The weatherman insists it's not getting warmer, Ron says to everybody and no one, stepping in front of his daughter to grab the milk and getting the famous Rachel Waters evil eye. No mention of it. Excuse me. He ducks under his son's arm to reach the cheese. Hey, tell it. If it was real, yes, they would. He sat at the table with his milk and sandwich and chips while the other three kept working on gathering their stuff. And yet, the UUs keep saying global warming this, the polar monkeys that, those poor glacier guppies there. We've got to put our foot down. Enough is way more than enough. Sweatpants. It's not that warm out. In fact, it's kind of chilly, especially in the evening lately after the sun goes down. That's the stark reality we're dealing with here. Could you reach me the pickle, sweetie? Thanks. There goes Don. Oh my God, he's got Laverna in the back seat. She smiles, waves with her cupped hands. This is a big day for her. That's so nice. There's CCC. It's uphill like Mount Olympus, Carl says. It's almost straight up. Well, probably not straight up, but about feels like it. There's Carl. He's walking around his yard with his head down, arms around his back, his pipe in his teeth. He's heard. Hey, Carl. Hello, young man. Well, what's to be done? I pull right up to him, in front of him, maybe make him stop pacing. There's no way I can follow him all over his lawn on my bike with all the nightcrawler hills. He's actually pinned between me and the peonies. White, pink, too. I say, I don't know. He just wants to talk. I know that. His questions are not Socratic, rhetorical. He's not interested in what I have to say. That's okay with me. I didn't really come here to say anything. Carl's wearing a black professor's graduation gown. He has on an Afghan peckle hat. I know, because he told me. To me, he looks like maybe Sherlock Holmes in his graduation gown and pipe, out stalking his yard, unconsciously stepping over and around all the dandelions now that there's a local murder to be solved. Well, not really a murder yet. Could be. That would be serious. There would be lots of pacing required. People would have lots to say. There might be outdoor barbecues to talk it over. Maybe a circus. Big church festival. Parades. Candy. It's true that Don's on the case and already has the suspect in the back of his car, but I don't think it hurts to have Carl out here in his hat, black graduation gown, brown penny loafers, and pipe anyway, just in case. Cherry. The pipe tobacco. It's cherry. Mm-hmm. He takes it out and taps, or rather beats, Carl likes us to use specific language, against his palm, then the side of his shoe. I think he probably saw his granddad do that. There's really no reason. It'll just fall out if you turn it over. The financier is in official custody, Carl says, not looking at me, but rather over the lawn in the direction of the fire hydrant, as if it would speak, if only someone would listen. I'm a prop, like the pipe and hat and gown. Necessary for the play, but I don't mind. It is what it is. Jesse pulls up in the tan 88 Honda Accord ladder truck. He's trying to get a Dalmatian. He still lives at home, and his mother says they're a nasty breed. Jesse says he's either moving or just keeping the dog in the car. I'm not sure what that does to the monthly training sessions. There's a lot to consider when you enter the public service field. That's what Carl says in his public administration course. Jesse parks in the drive. rolls down the window, cocks his head. He's chewing gum. I think he's trying to quit smoking something. As he tilts his head to look up at Carl, somehow keeps the sun out of his eyes. His seed corn cap hits the door frame. Now sits on kind of an angle on his head, which turns out just right for the sun. I'm thinking Watson, I presume. I smile, but I don't see. What about the food, says Jesse. Carl flashes a look that is all about the foods. Foods, foods. Carl presses those nuggets with his fingertips into the ground. The foods. Jesse tamps the ground. You think the foods took sweat socks? I run over, trying not to trip and spill the water again. I was smiling. It's a way small town. Carl narrowed his eyes, struck a match on the back of his shoe, and lit his pipe. I think even he was surprised it worked. He gazed at the satellite dish on the side of the house, pursed his lips to make smoke rings, settling for what he could get, which was not that great. They're Korean, says Jesse. Cambodian, like that. Carl nodded once, twice. I silently scream from the bleachers, urging them on. I look from Jesse to Carl and back. We've got lots of theirs. They took back one. That's what I heard, too, I said. And Carl began to draw now. You're saying this Rothschild magnate is connected as well? I stared. Jesse squinted even more against the sun. Carl popped it. And then it's a ring. A wide, wide ring. Of babies, mere infants, swaddlers, and boxes, noodle boxes, containers, take home, Ho-Chunk noodles, empty coming in, not so empty going out, is that what you're saying? I stared, then sat back on my seat, since my calves were starting to cramp up. Jesse put up a hand against the sun and looked at Professor Carl through the space between his fingers. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake. Where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday. And thank you, Mike, and good night.
What do you see? Homes being foreclosed. People working 2-3 jobs just to put food on the table and still drowning in debt. Don't get me wrong. This country was founded on great ideals and principles. They've all been ruined by the banks. Open your eyes to the banks that are robbing you. You know who my favorite president was?
Who?
Thomas Jefferson. Because he saw all of this coming and tried to stop it. He fought the banks. JFK too, and they killed him for it. The banking institution is more dangerous than an army, he said. He also said that every generation needs a revolution, Jimmy. The American dream is just that. Just a dream. War is a continuation of politics, only by other means. Politics is a continuation of economics by other means. This is our bank. This
is our war. And this is our plan of attack.
Banks have become an essential threat to our democracy. So consider this
justice.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support the station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart. You can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves...